Hi friends, it's Brittany. Before we dive into today's episode, I have a quick ask for you. I need your help. I'm doing a short listener survey to get to know you a little bit better. Who's tuning in? What do you love? And how I can keep Conscious Pathways fresh, meaningful, and aligned with what you need. It won't take more than 5 minutes, and your feedback means so much to me. It helps me grow and helps this podcast to grow with you. You'll find the link in the show notes, and I would be so grateful if you took a moment to share your thoughts. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. And now let's get into the episode. Hey, hey, welcome back to Conscious Pathways. I'm your host, Brittany Carey, and I have a fabulous guest to share with you today. Julia Lohman has been committed to social change, anti-bias, and multicultural practices her entire career and beyond. She has been in early care and education for the past 28 years, working with families and children aged 0 to 12 in various settings and positions, including from a teacher to program director. She is currently an early care and education consultant and works for Head Start programs all across San Diego County. Her passion for social justice and anti-racism was nurtured at a young age by her father, who taught Black studies. She has woven this passion into everything she does, personally and professionally. In addition to her professional work, Julia is a proud parent of a 24-year-old and a bonus parent to a 7-year-old. Her ultimate child development experiments. I am so excited to share this conversation with you. We talked about everything from early childhood to higher education. We talked about our hopes, our goals, our dreams. It was just such a beautiful and amazing conversation, so let's jump into it. Welcome to the Conscious Pathways podcast. I have Julia with me today.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Welcome. I'm so excited to have you here. I think the first time that we actually met each other was earlier this year at the San Diego Imperial California Association for the Education of Young Children Conference. It is such a long name for that conference.
Yes.
Yes, I feel like we need a shorter acronym for the acronym.
Well, you know, it used to be shorter. Funny thing is, so it used to be simply SDAYC, so San Diego Association for Education of Young Children. And actually, while I was president of the, which is the local chapter of the state and national chapter of National Association for Education of Young Children, and so. NAYC for short, went through a shift in how they were doing their affiliates and chapters. And so as part of my presidency, I helped shift that from SDAYC to becoming a chapter under the state. And the state is the California Association for Education of Young Children. And so with that shift, we had to shift our name because we were not going to be our own entity anymore. And so hence the San Diego Imperial chapter of California. So
I love that. I love that breakdown. Because so, I did not know. I just remember trying to promote that, that we were there.
I was like, does it mean that it doesn't need to shorten? But at least you know why.
At least I know why. There's always a reason why. But I remember you did such a beautiful session there, and I was just so inspired, and it was just culturally relevant, and it was just had so much good, juicy content in it. And I was like, I need to connect with this person.
And I'm so glad that you did. That was a fun one to do. There's never enough time. Even if you're given 45 minutes or 2 hours, there's never enough time. But yes, I'm glad that you were able to come in and reconnect it, because I was like, oh, I walked away thinking, like, I'm really glad. It's like, we definitely need to talk. And this is the first time. No, we ran into each other at Planning Council.
We did.
Is that in July?
I believe that was back in July. We ran into each other at the local Planning Council. One of the big council meetings, because they have the big council meetings and then the subcommittee meetings, lots of meetings. But that was so great to run into you, because I know you've been trying to connect for a while, and life is just lifing sometimes.
Yes, it does that a lot.
Yes. So I'm so honored that you're choosing to spend this time with me today and join the podcast. So I have some questions for you. My first one is, tell me a little bit about your background in early childhood education. Why early childhood education? Where did you get your start? Tell me all of it.
Well, I tell you all of it. It may be hours, but let me see if I can do an abbreviated version. Well, you know, I've been in early childhood for 28 years.
Wow.
Yes, 28 years.
Wow.
28 years. I started when I was 2.
Are we going way, way back?
I started early childhood education in early childhood. No, actually, I had gotten out of high school and wanted to be a teacher and started over at San Diego State and was working at a sporting goods store while I was taking classes. Because a lot of times, you know, go to college and you're not really in the field yet. And I was not happy. And I had someone ask me, like, well, what would you make you happy? I was like, well, you know, working with kids, which is why I'm going to school. And I said, well, why don't you like work at a preschool? And it's like, oh, I don't have to have my degree yet. And they're like, no. So I actually ended up dropping from San Diego State at the time. Now I know I had some learning and neurodivergent abilities that were occurring. And so I started taking classes at Grossmont College, which ironically is where you and I met.
Yes.
I was doing that workshop. And so I started taking early childhood classes. Now, I will tell you, when I tried to get a preschool job, I hadn't taken those classes yet. I actually, this was back in the day when you actually went through the classifieds and looked through the newspaper. So I was calling places and saying, hey, you know, I'm interested in being a teacher. Because in my mind, I have always loved working with little kids. And so they're like, I kept seeing CD or ECE after, and I didn't know, have any idea what that meant. And so I was, they're like, well, do you have any units? And I was like, what kind of units? And I was like, oh, on here, what are ECE units? And I'm sure the person on the other end was, who is this person? They're like, you know, you need to go to school and take classes. And in my head, I'm like, somebody said I didn't need to have a degree. It's like, well, no, but you do need to take classes.
Yeah.
So that's how I ended up at Grossmont. And it was at Grossmont when I was in, it was my, I had had 6 units. And one of my classmates had a preschool that they had just taken over in Lakeside, needed a toddler teacher. And said, hey, they asked me if I was interested. And I said, yeah, sure, but I don't have a lot of experience. So I said, oh, that's okay. Because they'd seen me in class. They had never seen me in the classroom, though.
So, yes. Two different things.
Yeah. Yeah. I really would never have put, well, I wouldn't say never, but I would not have put my children in my classroom because I have higher expectations. I was a teacher in a 2-year-old room. So if you've worked with 2-year-olds.
Yep. I sure have.
Working with 1 or 2 is one thing, but working with 12 of them all by yourself.
Yep.
Is a bit of a challenge.
Which is still wild to me that you can have a classroom, at least in California. I don't know how it is for other states as well, but in California, you can have a classroom full of 12 2-year-olds and you can just have that by yourself. And it's great if you love chaos. It's great if you love chaos.
Yeah, or not, or you don't really have a, you're not really super concerned about developmentally appropriate practices. You know, there's other states, and it's been a while since I've done the research, but there are other states that you don't have to have any units.
Wow.
Zero.
Wow.
Yeah, and
that is wild to me.
Yeah. And so I think I lasted about 3 months and I kept getting sick because when you work with little people, your immune system needs to build up. And there was every year that now the day, I think it was the day that I was changing a diaper on a stack of cots because my classroom did not have a changing table. And I had one little one in the bathroom, which at least I could see them visually. Mm-hmm. And of course, everybody else is kind of playing in the room. And one of them got stuck in the little kitchen set. So in the little play sink, they climbed in there and got stuck in there.
Oh, wow.
And while they're in there, one of their friends thought they would take a taste of them and bit them in the leg.
Oh, no.
And then promptly ran out the door to the playground.
Oh, wow.
And so I sat there and I was like, okay, this one will roll off and get hurt. So let me finish this. The one that's outside, not supposed to be out there. And I'm pretty sure that's a licensing problem. However, they won't leave the yard. Mm-hmm. There was also no phone in my classroom.
Oh, geez.
Okay. To ask for help. The one that's crying and stuck in the kitchen, he's stuck there. He's not getting out. So I triaged.
You're just triaging. Yes, you got to triage.
Yes. So that experience, I did change the diaper. Eventually got the kid off the playground, got the child out of the kitchen sink, under the kitchen sink, put the ice on them.
Yeah.
And said, hey, you know, I need to get another job because this is more, I need to know more. And I think that was the big thing. And it's always been for me is I need to know more. Whereas for some folks, they're like, that's okay. This is what I need to do. And I just was like, I don't feel comfortable with this. So I need to learn more. And so I ended up working at a family child care where I was able to get more units and experiences, which is a beautiful, beautiful setting. And she and I are still friends. And my son ended up going there. And so I worked in a family child care for a little while. And she kept paying me more and more so I wouldn't leave. But I'm one of those people, even when if I enjoy the place, I always want to be learning. Yes. And I kind of felt like I'd soaked up everything that I could and ended up going and working at, I had a friend, actually my dad's friend his partner was working at one of the colleges here in the enrollment department and said, you know, we always need subs and this is how much they pay. And I was young and trying to pay my rent and was like, hey, let me go over there. And I did go over there as a sub, ended up getting on full time. I worked with the toddlers for most of it. And then I went into the 2-year-olds again.
Dip your toe back in.
You know, I love them. I do. And I realize that that is not my gift. 2-year-olds are not, 2-year-old classrooms are not my gift.
Yeah.
The classroom I worked in we had 24, but at least there were four teachers. There was a lead teacher and associate teachers. So there were four of us. However, mine was always the table where the kids finished first. Everybody's like, don't let them get up because then they're all going to get up. I'm like,
Yes. Need to learn more.
I do. I was like, I've learned how to say sit down in Japanese, Chinese, Farsi, with these languages. And speaking their language, but it's not what they want to do because they're not. Two.
It's because they're two. And developmentally, those attention spans just aren't, they're not there.
No. Yeah. So I was there for a little while. I worked in the 2-year-old room, worked with 4-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Ended up, did I get married? Yeah, I got married. And I got engaged and was thinking, you know, I really am ready for my own classroom. But where I was, nobody was going to leave because you have great benefits, amazing benefits. Mm-hmm. And if you can keep doing what you love doing, you have great benefits. You've been there a while, so you just stay.
Yeah.
So I moved
on.
Was
this a Head Start or was it a California State preschool?
It was a state preschool. They had state funding. Yeah, they had state funding. And so I ended up taking a job at a private preschool, private nonprofit that specialized in, had also home health nursing. And so at the school is really cool. At the time it was called Special Care. Now it's called Together We Grow, I believe, and it's not in the same place. But they also had, there's teachers and nurses. So for those children that have medically fragile needs. And so that was a really good experience. And so I got married. They said, you know, I was going in for working in the infant room, which was, I think that's one of the, I would always be willing to go back to the infant room. Because I absolutely, it's just so much, so much magic happens in a short period of time. And so they said, I was replacing one of four teachers in a very small program that were all going on maternity leave within weeks of each other.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Two of them were in that same classroom.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
Yeah. And I was like, well, you know, I'm fine. Doctor told me I'd have trouble having children. So I'm the one for you. And they said, well, don't drink the water. I was like, I'll drink the water. And 6 months later, I was pregnant.
So there was something going on in the water there.
Oh, yes. And from what I heard after I had left, that did happen to other people, too. So it was kind of
fun. Oh, wow.
But they moved from the location. So I don't know if the magic is still happening.
They're like, we need to move locations. We keep losing our teacher.
Yeah.
What's happening?
Yeah. Right? So I keep getting pregnant. And so, yeah, he is now 24. So this was 24 years ago. And the day that I was nursing him, I had another with a bottle on the other side and somebody I was like bouncing with my foot. It's like, you know, I have to take one of you home with me. And kudos to everyone who is able to work with their own children in their classroom or at their family childcare. I hands down, you are amazing. It's I needed to have that separation. So I ended up going, that was just, that's not my gift. I have many others. So I ended up, that's when I got into administration. And so I became an assistant director at a for-profit program. So it was my first time working at a straight for-profit. Until then, it had always been nonprofit.
Yeah.
That I know of. At least in the childcare settings, because the center-based settings. And it was really hard for me to reconcile making money off of a service. It was really hard for me to think about profit, which was also part of my challenge when I worked in retail. It's like, if somebody doesn't want something, I'm not going to try to convince you that you do want it so I can make money.
Yes. That's why I would not do sales. I don't think I would be good at sales. Like, do you want this? No? Okay. Have a good day.
Right? Like, I might. Yeah. Okay. Now I might actually, I was like, are you sure you don't want it? This is what it could do for you. Then you're like, no. All right.
It's like, okay. Okay. So the idea of upselling, I used to work in restaurants and bars and cafes, and they would always be like, okay, this is the thing we need you to upsell, like upsell this. And I'm like, okay, I guess, but up to my own devices. Like, I don't know, if you don't want it, you don't want it. Like I don't have the sales gene. I recognize that. I agree. I have many other talents. I am talented in an abundance of things. I recognize that sales is not the thing that I excel in.
You know, it's funny because, you know, also I've also realized just throughout the years that people that are really good in sales will also try to convince you that you can sell things. And I'm like, no. Like, here, you can do that. No.
No. That's not my gift.
I think that No. And I think also just not even just the gift, but inside it doesn't feel right. I know somehow my parents aren't sure when I brought this up, how I got the message, but this message that whatever I do has to have social capital. And for me, working in early childhood education and my interactions in the different spaces is building that social capital. And that isn't necessarily monetary. And so I think that was the other piece that just didn't fit right. And I actually started getting really kind of depressed because I was like, okay, I have a, the time was 18 month at home. I'm working from 11 to 7 because we had late hours and like, so it doesn't feel right. And ended up after that, I ended up going working for the Y at one of their child development centers. And my heart was back. You know, and working there. Actually, no, you know what? Before I did that, I went back to the family child care because my friend was like, Julie, come back. Bring Sean with you. Come back. And so I felt better. It was a good reset. But then once again, she's like, I know I can't pay you enough. I can't keep paying you more. So, and you've got to keep learning, even if I keep paying you more. So then I ended up at the Y. So all that time, I was still continuing my education. But I think the foundation at Grossmont College was, I think, one of the strengths because there was such a focus on the whole child, all child development. I've taken classes at City, Mesa, all of the different places. I just know that when I was at Grossmont, this honor of young children, and I also got introduced to the AUIC system, I should say, the professional development system, because there was a pamphlet in one of my classrooms. So I literally have been a member since I've been in the field, you know, off and on. You know, those younger days where like, oh, I can't quite pay that, but so this desire for learning kind of kept going. So I take my classes, still then become a mom, become a wife, and still keep going and working and learning. And, you know, I worked for as a site supervisor and a program director, and then moved forward. That had to do with my son. I was working 12-hour days, and he was such a trooper, though, because he would, once he was potty trained, he came to work with me, and he was so cute. At the end of the day, they'd ask him at the front desk, they'd say, Sean, you want to work at the front desk or on the, do you want to help us write receipts on the computer? And you'd say, I work on the Peter. So you'd go work on the computer. And so it was really this nice, cool little family that we created. And actually, once again, that's, I have friends that were still really close from when I worked there that we really worked together. And like, you know, though, I want to be more than when we come home. Okay, let's go to bed, eat and go to bed. And worked as a, got a job as a program director for Child Development Associates down in South Bay. But now they had, at the time, they had a for-profit program they were running. And then I worked on the nonprofit, state-funded, was the program director for them. And it was an amazing learning experience. And that's where I got introduced to the local planning council. The one of the founders, Charlene Tressler, she rest in power, was extremely influential and on my path. And we got a grant to help develop the master plan for Preschool for All, which we currently know now as QPI. And also part of a foundation of the of San Diego County's Blueprint Plant for Childcare. Little did I know at the time. But at the time, it was to help support the development of the master plan. And and that's where I really, I learned about the politics in early childhood education and understand, you know, all the decisions that are made at the county level. And remember thinking, these are a lot of decisions that are being made about people that are not here. or for people that are not here. And so I think once again, tapped into that desire to make sure that there is a voice there and let other people know that, hey, you know, while you're in the classroom, these are decisions that are being made. Do you want to have an input or do you, you're like, I'm not really worried about it. And so helping bring those issues forward to help other people understand. And also became as part of that development, joining the SDAYC board and starting with committee work and the I was a committee chair for administrators and directors and the committee for social change was near and dear to my heart, where I got connected on the larger scale with the state association, which is now California AUIC, and became a part of the board there and learned more there. And just, I've been able, I'm very grateful because of early childhood education that I, and my passion, that I've been able to go to different places and see what's going on and then return to home to see what I can do with that information.
So, love that.
There's, you know, it's, there's so many wonderful things happening in this world that we don't know about, and so many amazing things that people do with young children in different parts of the world that we don't know. And why not, when, especially in San Diego County, where we are one, a destination when it comes to the military, where you have like huge military population and all kinds of different people coming here. And then one of the main ports for refugees and immigrants. And so why shouldn't we know more about the places that they came from and not just assume that they need our education to be this specific way, but to really be authentic and responsive and also understand that even if it may not have been the best, quote, quality, that this is the education foundation they're built on. So let's understand that so that we can kind of weave it all together, not melt it, but weave it all together.
Weaving like it, this tapestry. Incorporate it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. And so, that,
That is, so that now is so
powerful. Been a Head Start for 15 years.
Wow.
Ended up here at Neighborhood House Association for 15 years and have done different things even there. So I kind of, I've done a lot of different things from being in the classroom and then also being in administration and then also being support services and disabilities coordinator. And so the lenses, I think the most common thread, no matter what my experience has been, is one, that social capital. And ensuring is elevating voices of those that may not commonly be heard or spoke for. And not just elevating their voices, but going back and saying, hey, these are the things that are happening and I know you can't be there. What can I do to say? I think a friend of mine said, I think it was in 10th, 11th grade, somebody gave me a poem. I was in Catholic school and it gave me a quote about being like the voice for the voiceless. And I don't believe anybody has no voice. Everybody has a voice in a different way. But there is a time where you can help voice what others need you to do. And so I kind of worked on channeling and being, just making sure I have that authentic and the, not just authentic, but the voice is ingrained in me, not and that it's not mine, that I'm not taking it for myself, you know.
And that's like that core of advocacy is again giving those voices to the people who have been historically disenfranchised, you know, elevating them, making sure that the people on the ground have the resources, have the opportunities to be able to advocate and be a part of those solutions. There's so much of what you said is just, it resonates so deeply with me. And I've really loved and I've enjoyed hearing your pathway through you know, just different jobs you've had, different places you've worked. Because I think when we think about early childhood education, sometimes, like I've heard like in my classes as well, people kind of not wanting to do early childhood education because they don't want to be pigeonholed to do one thing. It's like, well, if I do this, then I can only be this. I can only be a teacher, or I can only be a director, or I can only, you know, teach at a collegiate level. Like those are my only three options if this is what I do. And that's not the case. There is so much that you can do with your background and experience in early childhood. And as you said, there's things that we can be doing in policy. There's things that we can be doing even with the school board. That early childhood education voice needs to be more prevalent, especially with TK now being a part of essentially the school district. Now more than ever, like we need to be, our voices need to be heard about what's developmentally appropriate, what policies are appropriate. And as you're saying, California and San Diego is exceptionally diverse. We have a lot of backgrounds. We have a lot of voices. We have a lot of people, even from different states, even from different countries, communities, different languages. We have just this wealth of diversity that is here. Why not tap into that? Why not bring these voices to the table and have that be a part of these policy meetings, which is so great. What the local planning council is doing is really doing its best to elevate a diverse voice, a diverse amount of voices, so that we can propose and make suggestions and make recommendations. The blueprint was such a really great thing that, as you mentioned, is something that, you know, didn't just emerge this year. It's been going on. It's been talked about for years. People have been recommending things. It's been in the process for years. So many different voices have had an impact on making on the pathway to this blueprint going up to, you know, the board of supervisors and then getting approved and kind of seeing how what we do with that going forward is going to be so amazing. So, yes, another thing that you mentioned that I really loved is you're saying, I just need to learn more. I think when we go through hard things, especially in early childhood, it can be really disheartening, and it can be, oh, I'm just not good at this, or this just isn't for me, or there's so many different ideas that come out of that when at the core of it, it's just, I need to learn a little bit more about this. I swear, I say it almost every time on this podcast, but I'm a better teacher the more that I learn. The more that I learn from my peers, the more that I learn about theory, the more that I learn about social, you know, social change and social justice and anti-bias and just all these different things. When I learn more, I'm able to bring that to the teaching community, and I'm able to bring that to the classroom, and it makes me a better teacher in so many different ways just by being curious and wanting to learn more.
Yes. You know, it's one of my descriptions I often use for myself as being passionately curious.
Yes.
Always. You know, one, just to add on the learning more, I think the other piece of that is, is learning more about myself and who I am in response to the different environments. You know, because there's some places where, like, I've learned, it's like, you know, I can learn all the theory and practice all of these different things. And I know if she's listening, one of my previous supervisors is probably thinking, yeah, that sounds about right. Hey, this is what you can do. Just like think about the 2 year olds. Like, hey, this is what you do with the 2 year olds. I'm like, I did it and it's not working. You know, is that there's so many things that I kept trying and doing different things. Like, okay, I'll approach it like this. Okay, I can approach it like this. Okay, then there's this theory. I'm like, okay, then there's just me. And then there are these little individual beings that are interacting with an environment of other beings. And so at some point you're like, you know, I can learn everything in the world, but it's just not something that is my best skill. Just like, you know, my dad was a basketball coach and I could tell you all the things, not as much now, but when I was younger, I could tell you everything you needed to do to get your shot in there. How to correct it, all of these different things. But then I'd go to do it myself and my body, I'm a soccer player. I ran track and soccer. Those were the ones that I excelled at. Played basketball. Anything required hand-eye coordination. it's more of a challenge. And so even though I know all the theory and the background, the ability to execute wasn't necessarily there. And it's the same thing. And, you know, there's different points in my life where I may not have been able to execute then, but I can now, and vice versa. And it's just kind of finding where that fits, you know?
Yes. And there's absolutely no shame in just recognizing that, you know what, this is a skill that I'm going to keep working on. I'm going to keep developing it. I'm going to keep learning. But I know that it's not there for me. Like, that is not where
If you're like me, you believe in the power of education and social justice. And what's more powerful than a good book? Today, I want to share an incredible way for you to support local independent bookstores while you indulge in your love of reading. Have you ever heard of bookshop.org? They're an amazing platform that connects readers just like us to independent booksellers all around the world. Local bookstores are essential for our communities. They foster culture, curiosity, and a lifelong love of reading. But they need our support to thrive, especially in this age of e-commerce giants. Bookshop.org is committed to helping those bookstores flourish. Every purchase you make on their site financially supports independent bookstores. That's right, every single purchase. They provide these stores with the tools they need to compete online and maintain their vibrant presence in our neighborhoods. They put their mission and public good above financial interests, giving over 80% of their profit margin to independent bookstores. That's a commitment you don't see every day. In fact, in 2020, they were recognized as the best of the world by B Labs, ranking in the top 5% of all B corporations. And guess what? It's written into their government's documents that they will never sell the company to Amazon or any major retailer. That's dedication to their mission. Plus, as a climate-neutral company, they're committed to operating sustainably. Another reason to feel good about your purchases. So if you're looking to buy a book and make a positive impact, head over to bookshop.org and use my affiliate link that's linked in my show notes below. By doing so, you'll be supporting local bookshops and helping them thrive. Let's make a difference one book at a time. Happy reading, and thank you for supporting our local bookshops.
Naturally, I'm going to keep excelling, and there's no shame in that. You know, sometimes I've been in classrooms. 2-year-olds are personally my favorite age. I love 2-year-olds. I have the 2-year-old gene.
I love them.
I love working with them. I love being in the classroom with them. That is my favorite age to work with. I love them. Now you put me in a room with a bunch of 17-year-olds. I'm like, okay, well, that is not my strength. I can do it. I know developmentally about adolescence. I know exactly what you're saying. I know everything there is to go into adolescence, adolescent development. I love it. I love youth-adult partnerships. I love that. Mm-hmm. In practice, though, I just recognize that that's not my strongest. That's not my strength. They're going to make one snarky comment at me and my feelings are going to get hurt.
And I would have been the one that was making the snarky comment. So I'm so sorry for that. Well, you know, it's funny because when I worked at the Y, I ended up being taking on the camp program and the after school program. And so that's programming up to age 12. And which was fine. I was like, hey, you know, I've got the skills to administer this program. And I realized for myself is that even though I had the skills, I was able to do it. Mm-hmm. My heart was more in the 0 to 5. Whereas, you know, for me, it's like, right, camp was fun, but it's a week and you never know if you're going to have the same kids or not. Yeah. And I was at a smaller one of the Y's. And so it's kind of like, okay, well, if I don't have this kid with, I think in the classroom or even in a after school program, that you have those same kids every day and you get to watch them grow and learn and grow and, the challenges presented for those that are in elementary school were just a little bit more than where my heart was. I shouldn't say that. When as my son has gotten older, well, now he's 24, but I noticed at each age, because I was a little nervous. I'm like, okay, he's going to not be 5. He's going to get older than 5 at some point. Yeah. What am I going to do with him? And I think because I've been given the gift of being able to see the magic in development of people. And so, people are so fascinating. And I have to really stop myself sometimes, even now. I'm like, wow, that's really fascinating. Like, but you're not supposed to be doing that. So let's
Redirect.
Not just be fascinating. Makes it difficult when you're married sometimes. This process was really cool. It's like, no, it's not cool for me.
Yes, know? Yes. My favorite phrase that I would always use, especially with my two-year-olds, is tell me about your idea, right? So they'll be, you'll see them like climbing on the table. They're like putting chairs on the table. They're trying to climb on it. And I'm like, okay, pause. Mm-hmm. I see you have an amazing idea. Mm-hmm. Tell me about walk me through your idea here. And they do it like, we're going to do this and we're going to do this. And I'm like, that sounds amazing. That sounds so fun. Mm-hmm. But here's some other ideas. Mm-hmm. Let's work together. I think there's some other ways that we can do that. That's not putting mm-hmm. your body in danger. And it's not putting our friends' bodies in danger. Let's talk this out. Let's figure it out. And there's so much magic in that.
There is. And we must. And it really is like, let's work within the constraints of the reality mm-hmm. we have. Which is a classroom.
I need to remind me my own self of that on a regular basis.
Right? I know. I remember one time I was at I think I was a director at the time, and I was at a site where the teacher mm-hmm. was like, yeah, we have the child with challenging behavior. And that's another mm-hmm. area that I love getting in and rolling up my sleeves mm-hmm. and helping kind of figure out mm-hmm. how to manage. And so I remember they're like, one of the things this child would kept going up the slide. And I was like, well, why can't he go up the slide? What's mm-hmm. wrong with going up the slide? Like, well, yeah. You're not supposed to do that. Like, but why not? Well, because people can get hurt. Like, okay, but there's nobody else there. How can they get hurt? And they're like, well, you're just not supposed to do that. And so I think for me, it's like always asking why or why not. And so like, okay, well, it's definitely more of a challenge to go up than it is to go down.
Yes.
So are there challenges that are there presented that make it harder to go up in other areas that are safe than to go down? And really, it's like, okay, what is this child needing? And can we meet that need? And, you know, it's not always popular because it's always like, no, you just don't go up the slide. Like, well, I go up the slide all the time. Well, I used to. And so being one of those people that would go up the slide and say things that you really shouldn't be saying and kind of helps see the multiple dimensions that are available within that magic. So like, okay, you can do this magic here, but you can't do just kind of, I don't know, you watch Harry Potter?
I never watched Harry Potter. I know. In my age group, it was all the rage. And for some reason, I just did not.
You know, and that's okay. And a lot of, I know, so there are more and more people, and I know not everybody watches it, and not everybody agrees with the whole idea of magic. But one of the premises in there is that you are not supposed to do magic in front of what's called muggles or non-magic people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So really, once it's like there's a place where you do it and there's a place where you can't do it.
Yes.
And so it's helping. And I was like, okay, well, here, let's frame it. Just kind of like your two-year-old. It's like, you know, this is an amazing construction idea that you have. Mm-hmm. We're in a classroom where there's lots of other people and somebody can get hurt. So unfortunately... Mm-hmm. Can't do it here on this table, but let's find somewhere else.
Yes. And that's so much.
Yeah.
I always go back to this idea of just very intentional teaching. Like, what is my intention? Right? Is my intention that the students in my classrooms are blindly obedient, that they do exactly what I say and they don't question me at all? Or is my intention that I want these young individuals to be agents of social change? Right? Do I want them to go throughout the world and question things, have questions, right? I want them to understand that in different spaces, we might have different rules. What works in the classroom might not be the same rules you have at home. And the same rules you have at home might not be the same rules you have at grandma's house, right? There might be completely different rules there. And so different spaces have different rules. And let's talk about that, right? So what is my intention by telling this child they can't go up the slide, right? Is it my intention to keep kids safe? Okay, cool. Then let's make a plan with this child. Let's make a plan. Let's stop and look. Okay, take a pause. Before we go up the slide, let's use our looking eyes. Do you see a friend up there? Because if a friend is up there and they're coming down and you're trying to go up, something's going to happen. Something that nobody here wants is going to happen. Like, what do you think could happen? Right? And then their wheels start turning like, oh, okay. So you're looking up there. You're going to call out to your friends like, I'm going to come up now so that they know what's coming. Right? So now we're working together. Now we're using social emotional skills. Now we're doing, right? That's my intention. My intention is to have a developmentally appropriate classroom. My intention is to provide quality care. My intention is that these individuals grow up to be good, decent, happy people. And part of that means we got to work with our peers. Part of that means we got to learn that there's different rules for different spaces. There's different people like different things. And that's okay.
Yeah. You know, the other piece that you said was, is this going to be safe for others? And I think as we look at the parallels in life, that there's some places, like you're going to go up a slide and people are like, oh, why is that person going up that slide? You're not supposed to be doing that. And in my head, I'm like, well, there's nobody there, so it must be safe. I'm like, no, there is a giant man up there that is going to get everybody. Or, you know, like there's a big monster. Or there's reasons why in that setting you just don't go up there because you could get hurt in ways that you have no idea about.
You can't even conceptualize yet, but I know. As the adult who can see it.
I'm like, oh, it's happening again.
Yes.
Those curious slide climbers.
Yes. Yes. It is what happens. And, you know, you just, again, just be intentional. What is our intention here? Mm-hmm. What do I actually want them to learn? What do I want them to be doing? And when I'm kind of going back to what you said too, is connecting back to yourself and connecting back to your own, like, what do I want? Who do I want to be as an educator and as a teacher? What is the environment that I want to create? What are my intentions? Mm-hmm. And when you're really firm on those things, that this is what I want my classroom community to look like and to feel like. I want my students to question me if they don't understand. I want them to, if they think there's a better way that we could be doing something in the classroom, let's talk about it. I don't want to be the all-seeing, all-knowing, omnipotent being in the classroom where whatever I say goes and that I know everything in the world. I don't want, because I don't. I don't know everything. And there's so much joy in that. I want to hear their suggestions and I want to have dialogue. I want to be able to talk that through of, you know what, I see you have a really great idea here. Here's where I'm coming from on that. Or that's a great idea, but that might not work for all of our friends. Let's brainstorm a better idea that we can utilize all of our friends in that idea, right? I want that. And so by doing that, that means that I might think about a different way, or I might go about a rule a different way. I always love community rules in the classroom, right? Even for our very, very young learners, community rules can be so important for them to, again, learn, okay, there's different rules and different roles for different spaces that I go. And that's okay. And it's just going to be okay. At the park, I can climb up the slide all day, every day, and no one's going to tell me no, right? At school, we got to stop, look, and listen sometime. Otherwise, we're going to have a collision, and nobody's going to like that.
You know, I love what you said as far as just going back to that intentionality. It's like, what is my intention here in this space? It's like as a teacher, and then I think also questioning, is this intent, does my intention fit this space? And this vision, I know, of this is what I'd like to be. However, this is what the reality is, and how am I with it? And developing that emotional intelligence as well as the social intelligence, you know, there's the multiple intelligences and really tapping into it to understand that, you know, the reality is, and my son just told me that the 24-year-old, I have my 7-year-old bonus baby, who also is one of those, you know, is like, hey, we have lots of discussions about why this is okay and this is not okay, and why they think that this should be okay. And I think I recently said, it's like, you know, honestly, right now, it's just because I need you to do what I asked you to do. It's not a time to be debating or questioning. And I think the 24-year-old said, you know, that's actually one of the worst answers you could possibly give somebody. And like, What I did worked way too well. Way too well. It's just been the story his whole life. But I think ultimately it's true. There are some times that you just, it's like if there is an emergency, it is not the time to be questioning the person telling you how to get out of the burning building about why they chose that path.
Yes.
Why are we going this way? I really just go because you are going to get burnt alive. Just go.
Yes.
No. Yes. So is understanding, you know, the time and space. And I think our goal as educators, and I think that's where I feel like my passion is with the young children, but also with the adults that work with the young children, is to help navigate those spaces where we figure out, okay, this is a space where I have to just do what needs to happen. And how, what is my role as the teacher, helping children understand that, you know, we have to do that this way because of X, Y, Z. And there are times that, you know, we don't have to time the talk about it, but we don't have to be rude or demeaning or like, wow, you know, I would love to have this conversation with you, but right now it's time to go to sleep and everybody else is really quiet and we don't want to wake them up. That's the reality.
Yes.
But and we want to have that conversation.
Exactly. You know? And I think talking that out, I think sometimes we think of young children and we think, oh, you know, they're like, I don't think we sometimes think of children as people. And that is like the most bizarre thing to me. Like, no, they're just people. They're just smaller in learning. They're learning how to people, but they're still people. And talking them through these types of things, exactly what you said of, I value your input. And I think that your voice is very valuable in this community. Yes. And right now at this moment, I do not have the capacity to hear that. I would love to hear it after nap time. Mm-hmm. But right now, it's not very respectful to our friends that we are talking. Our friends are trying to sleep. We need to be quiet, you know? But actually talking that out to them, and we may need to have that conversation multiple times, depending on the age, multiple times throughout multiple minutes, you know? But eventually, again, that intention is, I want the students in my classroom to learn to be respectful. Right? Mm-hmm. And what does it mean to be respectful? In my classroom, being respectful doesn't always mean that you need to blindly be obedient to everything I say, but sometimes that means, let's look around at our community. Mm-hmm. Is what we're doing right now, is that helping our community or is that hurting our community? Mm-hmm. And if that's my intention, then I can have these conversations with them and eventually, by the end of the year, it'll all seep in. And then they'll be using my words to each other. And I'm like, okay, it only took us 9 months to get here, but we did get here.
you know, that's so valuable, is it takes time. And, you know, as adults, we forget about that and think that just because we're adults, that it should have already happened. And we're all still learning too. And so if there's a child, it's been 9 months and they're still not getting it, I got to look at myself and say, what am I doing? What can I do differently? Mm-hmm. What can I help them with? Because somebody like myself who does, I have ADHD inattentive type, which a lot of people are more in tune with, like they hear ADHD and think, oh, they're all over the place. And that's not always the case, is that sometimes you're all over the place in their brain. They're like hyper, it's like full speed ahead. And it's not always that they don't hear you. It's just that they're trying to figure it out. And some of that is helping them find the key, the right key that's going to unlock the door. You know, I kind of think of it, and especially for myself, because a lot of people don't know this about me. I haven't really made it all public for a lot of people, because it does have a stigma, and there are people start seeing you differently when you say it. And they're like, oh, that's because of her ADHD. I'm like, no, it's just because I'm tired of what's happening. But it's kind of like, for some, you know, they always say that the expression, a square peg in a round hole. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like having a really big round hole that square peg can fit in, but not quite. And there's just something there that's not quite. And you're like, well, they get it because they've done it here. It's like, yeah, but they haven't quite mastered it, or there's something that's not clicking for them. And trying to make sense out of it. And my role, I think there's the intention and understanding your role. So there's your intentions, but what is your role in it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, this is my intention, but that's not really my role. Like for myself, I've always, I was like, I'm a facilitator of learning. I can't make somebody grasp something in the way that I want them to unless their circumstances are right for it, just like myself. But then I also have learned that there are times where I need to direct the learning, not just facilitate. I need to be direct. And so I have to have that cognitive flexibility and the openness and really that understanding. So being able to see it from multiple perspectives and act on it. And if I don't have that skill, I have resources outside of myself, such as colleagues or other people in my life that can help me develop that understanding and seeing where I need to go to get that resource.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. That was just, it's so beautiful. And, you know, there's just a wealth of resources out there. And it's just, you just sometimes have to be guided to see it. It's available and it's there. And if it's not there, then like, let's ask why.
And sometimes we ask, oh, it's not there. So let's just make sure that we'll get it there for everybody else. And then we find out there's like 500 other resources that are similar, but because everybody didn't know. It kind of, I recently was at a, Children's Funding Institute in San Antonio. And I went with a group from San Diego here, the San Diego Children First, I always get it wrong, the Children First Collective San Diego. And it's a collective of different entities and individuals that are working towards really making sure high quality early childhood education, early care and education, and youth experiences are available for every child in San Diego, no matter what their experience is. And so going to this institute on funding, there are people from all over the country there. And it wasn't like a giant event, but there were different people. Honestly, which I was very proud of and I'm always very proud of, is that there's quite a few from California. Usually it's Northern California that has very innovative initiatives that they're trying to get on the ballot. And so it's really about funding that. And an interesting thing that I learned when, other than how much it costs to get something on the ballot, let alone help it succeed, is knowing who your champions are and looking at the different spaces that those champions may be, because there may be somebody else that's championing something similar. Like, for example, I think one of the examples, and I could be getting a little bit off, so I'll just say it's my imaginary example, guided by my imaginary example, informed by facts. So, you know, everybody, one thing that we can agree is that literacy is extremely important. And I am also on the board for an organization, Words Alive, which is a whole other conversation. But, you know, ultimately it's like, literacy is not something that should be inaccessible based on your economic, nothing. It should be accessible to everybody. Everybody should be able to be literate. And so let's say the librarians are on, there's a ballot initiative that's going to fund early childhood education, which we all think is wonderful. And that those pre-literacy skills will help them become readers, yada, yada, yada. We're focused on 0 to 5. Now, early childhood is 0 to 8, but looking at 0 to 5 world. And so we get this ballot initiative out there, and then all of a sudden we hear the librarians are against it. We're like, how could librarians be against it? Well, they may have another initiative that may do similar things, but there are other sources. And so some of those champions that you would want for their early childhood may not have some of, there might be things that impact, let's say, those funds that would go to funding early childhood may take funds from the library because it's being funded by the general fund. And they don't want that. And that so it's knowing who you, not just that I hate using the term stakeholders because it sounds so informal, but it is, you know,
it stakeholders, really does.
Who everybody's there, but who are the stakeholders? Who are the people?
Mm.
Who are the people that are impacted or influenced by the multiple details? And once again, there goes that intention.
Yes.
What are the details, or are there enough details?
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, our ballot initiative got struck down because librarians are a much stronger voice and are like, no, let's not do this. So next time, let's try again. I think that's the other piece is,
yeah,
you have to be willing to keep trying and to be able to resource yourself so that you can take care of yourself and know when you need to step back and let somebody else do it because you don't have the resource.
Yes.
And so, I don't have the capacity to meet with all of these different people. Mm-hmm. I only have 24 hours in the day and a half a full-time job, and it's not my job. Where are those champions that are out there at that?
Yes.
And also, what are all of the other pieces? Who knows who? And, you know, kind of like with the local planning council, we have people from different entities. We have parents. Mm-hmm. We have professionals. We have, you know, nonprofits. So there's all of these different representatives, but then also those who are not at the table, who can't come and sit at the table, that may not even want to be at the table, who don't care about the table, still will be impacted.
Still be impacted. We still have opinions and thoughts, but it is very taxing to be involved in all these different things and also be working full time and also be in the classroom and also be, you know, 24-hour parent, you know, like, it's hard to do all of those things. And so, as you said, kind of stepping up and stepping back, allowing other people to lead when they need to and taking that break when you need to is so important. Mm-hmm. And exactly, like, I think I've talked about it in a different episode, but advocacy can look so different to so many different people. And being in that classroom every day, that is your own step of advocacy. Mm-hmm. You are doing the advocacy by being in that classroom every single day, right? Mm-hmm. And for the people who do have the capacity and do have the drive and a desire to be a part of these meetings, is it fun to go to school board meetings? Not particularly. it's not the time of my life, but I don't mind going there because I want to be involved. I want to hear what's going on. I want to hear from the parents. I want to hear from the school board members.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the local planning council. I want to be there. I have the capacity to be there. And, you know, I have the time to be there right now. And so that, to me, is my form of advocacy. And that's how I'm showing up for my community.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many different ways and avenues to do that, to advocate within education and to be a part of that. And it's just, there's so much variety and beauty to it. You just got to look at what works. Again, coming back to yourself, what's going to work for me in the time that I have available right now that I have to spend with this, my mental capacity, my emotional capacity, like checking with yourself. Where are you? Do you have the capacity to do what it is you want to do? And it might be a not right now. And that's okay.
And it's hard.
I tell myself not right now all the time.
You know, it can be hard though, because it's not, you're like, you know, I really, you know, like something will happen, like, man, if I was there, I could have helped, or you know, I had to step back, and now they're starting over again, and now look, they're still in the same place, and it can be frustrating. And I think what that institute really taught me is like, yeah, it can be frustrating. And that's something that we've got to learn to sit with at times that we really don't want to sit with it.
Yeah.
And saying, you know, I don't want to sit with this. I'm not okay. I feel like this is a waste of resources and all of these other things. At the end of the day, the reality is I still got to sit with it. So,
sometimes you don't have a choice.
So I'll sit with it and the feeling will end. It will go away and I'll move on to something else and it will be okay.
Mm-hmm. And it will be okay. And on that topic of advocacy and education, how do you reimagine education?
I to reimagine it, I think is a tough question because, you know, I don't, I imagine it the way in this way. Right now is definitely not how I imagined it. I would like to reframe it for everyone. And I imagine, not everyone, but for those who are trying, there's lots of well-intentioned people who, when you have a little bit of knowledge of a system and they think they're helping and it has huge implications, or you want to rip the band-aid, just kind of like you brought up TK and how we've been advocating for high quality early childhood education and a pre-K system in California. And we've been advocating for it, and it hasn't happened the way that we imagined, you know? And so in my, I was like, that's not how I imagine it. So to bring it into my imagination, I imagine an early care and education system that is seen as an integral part and valued of the larger educational system. It's seen as a holistic system that is fully funded, that is funded in the ways that will help those communities thrive in the way that they need to, that will help children, help families, help the educators. Every person within the system has is able to contribute in the ways that will contribute to the learning and growth and development of others. And in a positive, healthy, there's negative things that happen, but I think a healthy and resilient way so that we can evolve. There's no cookie cutter approach because we're not cookie cutters. You know, it's like, you know, in school they say, you know, there's, oh, we're not a melting pot. We're a salad bowl. But guess what? There's a lot of stinking salads out there. So a lot of them. Won't even go into that debate. Raisins and potato salad.
Oh no. Don't get me started on that. No, thank you.
But just imagining that we respect the salads of the community. But we respect the individuals and honor and grow as a community. And evolve. And so I imagine a system that actually does that, has mutual respect and understanding of that collaboration that's needed to survive and thrive together.
Yes. I love it. Thriving together, just being in mutual aid of each other, mutual respect. And I think that theme that we've talked about a lot is just curiosity. Staying curious about those around us, wanting to learn more about those around us, wanting to learn to be the best that we can really be, and honoring where our gifts are, honoring where our gifts may not be the strongest.
Make those be your hobby, not your life skills.
You know, I think it's so good to keep learning, to keep doing those things, and keep doing it, but also just honoring that, okay, that may not be where my special gift lies, but I know that my special gift is spread out in many other areas and it is out there thriving. Is there any initiatives that you are a part of, anything going on that you wanted to share with the audience? Where can they find out more information about any of these initiatives that we've talked about?
Well, you know, there's so many out there. However, I would say, you know, there are some key spaces that I am really expending my energy right now that I want to uplift. One of those, of course, is my employer, not just because I get a paycheck, but, you know, I've been there for 15 years for a reason. And like Neighborhood House Association is also often mistaken for a place that where you find out about housing. And so So there's so much more. And so taking the time to visit Neighborhood House Association San Diego's website. The other would be the Children's First Collective of San Diego, because they're also part, they have the blueprint for childcare in San Diego County on their website. So looking them up, Words Alive, once again, mm-hmm. we're trying to eradicate illiteracy. Bottom line, but doing it in socially conscious ways that will expand and push your mind. So with wordsalive.org. And the other one, of course, is the local planning council. May not be everybody's thing, but there it might be somebody you know's thing. You know?
Yes.
Or, you know, there's always emailing that you can, I'm always available. Like, find me on LinkedIn if you've got a question or wonder about something and get connected and what you should know or help others know. So,
yes. Thank you. And I'll be sure to link all of this in the description of this episode. So if you're curious about anything we've talked about, it'll be there. Quick little click away. Julia, thank you so much for joining me today. This has just been such a refreshing conversation. I feel so energized.
Oh, me too.
Yay. Thank you so much for joining me and appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm so grateful for you opening your platform and using your voice to spend some time educating our community and making the world a better place.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Conscious Pathways podcast. Don't forget to like, share, and follow Conscious Pathways so you never miss a new episode. And please leave a review over on Apple Podcasts. It really helps the show to grow. You can also follow Conscious Pathways on YouTube, TikTok, or Instagram. As always, those socials will be linked in the show notes. And I'll be back next week for more transformative conversations in education. Bye!